Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is John O'Neill, and as Chairman of the Board of Directors, I welcome you to Star Entertainment Group's ninth annual general meeting here at the Westin in Brisbane and via live audio webcast today. I'm delighted to be with you here in Brisbane and look forward to being able to welcome you to our own venue in the future following completion of the Queen's Wharf Brisbane development just nearby. I walked past it last night and counted seven cranes, so there's certainly a bit of activity. I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land where we gather today, the Turrbal and the Yuggera people, and pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Before we start, may I ask everyone to please turn off your mobile phones to avoid interruptions to the meeting and interference with our audio-visual equipment. Moving to the formalities, as a quorum is clearly present to constitute the meeting, I formally declare the meeting open. I'd like to begin by introducing your board of directors. I'll ask each director to stand as I introduce them. With me today are Matt Bekier, our Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer, and our non-executive directors, Katie Lahey, Richard Shepherd, Gerard Bradley, Sally Pitkin, Ben Heap, and Zlatko Todorovski. Also with us today is Paula Martin, our Company Secretary, Harry Theodore, our new Chief Financial Officer, and Megan Wilson in the front row, the company's audit partner from Ernst & Young for the 2019 financial year. Additional members of the executive management team are also in attendance today, and they will join us for refreshments after the meeting. Before we proceed to the items of business for the meeting, our Managing Director, Matt, and myself will provide our reports on the company. And as per the usual form, I'll kick off. I'm showing my age. I have to change my glasses. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome again to the Star Entertainment Group's ninth annual general meeting. Importantly, it is our first in Brisbane. How appropriate, given the game-changing Queen's Wharf Brisbane project is now moving at pace. We look forward with excitement to 2022 and the planned opening of what will be Australia's most unique integrated resort with an extraordinary blend of contemporary and heritage buildings. A project that will help cement the Star Entertainment Group as Australia's leading integrated resort company. Our Chief Executive Officer, Matt Bekier, will provide more detail on the specifics of the Queen's Wharf capital works that have taken place over the past year. More broadly, the 2019 financial year saw ongoing expansion of our high-quality tourism, entertainment, and gaming assets across Sydney, the Gold Coast, and right here in Brisbane. This continued expansion was coupled with strong domestic results. Importantly, The Star's growth strategy continues to be supported by the ongoing development of a strategic alliance with our Hong Kong-based joint venture partners, Chow Tai Fook and Far East Consortium. The 2019 financial year marked 5 years of this valued relationship, and it was the 3.6 billion dollar Queen's Wharf Brisbane project that was the original vehicle for the creation of this partnership. I would now like to take the opportunity to update you, our shareholders, on another of our joint venture development projects. The Star Gold Coast has the potential to be a global tourism and entertainment destination that will rival Queen's Wharf for scale and be an absolute beacon to drive increased visitation and substantial economic benefits to the region. Our master plan will put the property at the necessary level to compete with the biggest and best integrated resorts around the world. Our commitment to Queensland and the Gold Coast is well documented. We could, when completed, boast more than 9 billion dollars worth of tourism assets and investments into Southeast Queensland. More than 9 billion dollars. A lot of money in anyone's language. The master plan will also deliver thousands of jobs for the Gold Coast. We expect each of the new five towers will create around 1,800 construction jobs. Once operational, there will be an additional 3,000 jobs at the Gold Coast. This is a significant jobs opportunity, a wonderful catalyst for employment across a diverse range of roles. The government, however, continues to speculate about a second casino on the Gold Coast. The Star's position has always been, and very unambiguously, we support investment in tourism assets on the Gold Coast, but the Gold Coast market is simply too small for two casinos. We are not alone in this assessment of the market. The introduction of another local casino competitor would force us to defend our local market, share, at the expense of driving incremental interstate and international tourism. This has been a distraction for the company for some 7 years. The process has yielded nothing but considerable cost, tens of millions of dollars to governments and proponents, and is impacting on our business, weighing on our share price. So today, I want to outline the plans we hope will result in the delivery of investment in tourism and jobs at the Gold Coast in place of talk processes without outcomes. There is broad agreement that the Gold Coast needs more tourism assets that drive more traffic into southeast Queensland, traffic that can be monetised by many tourism operators. To that end, and in the hope of breaking the deadlock of 7 years, we are reaching out to the Queensland Government. We are sharing with them our unilateral commitment for investment into such assets in return for certainty and around maintaining the Gold Coast as a one casino city, just like Brisbane. Let me now explain to you the level of investment and commitment we are prepared to extend by way of the following proposal. Essentially, there are three top line elements. The first is a contractual arrangement to deliver in stages the $2 billion plus master plan for the Star Gold Coast. This includes construction of five towers alongside our existing hotels, the Star Grand and the Darling. The first tower, including a Dorset Hotel, is already under construction. We are in apartment pre-sales for Tower 2, which will house a world-renowned five-star hotel brand. I can also reveal today that Tower 5 would feature a five-star hotel and potentially a Sky Park tourism playground with adventure, entertainment and luxury dining attractions. The master plan in its entirety would deliver significant new food and beverage offerings to create an unparalleled dining precinct for the Gold Coast. There will be retail outlets, infinity pools, gyms, a world-class day spa, an outdoor function centre for up to 1,000 people, and apartments which can be added to the short-term accommodation supply on Broadbeach Island. The second element in our offer to government is an investment of up to $100 million for the expansion and upgrade of the Gold Coast Convention and Exhibition Centre. This is an investment that could have the project commence immediately after an agreement is reached. It's not work that might be somewhere down the track. It's real, and we're ready to commit right here and right now. That's a timeline a long-running process is incapable of promising or delivering. It also means more jobs and the opportunity the Gold Coast to enhance as soon as possible its competitive positioning in the corporate event and conference market. Given the convention centre is a government asset, the detail of any works would be for the government to determine. But there is a 6,000-seat venue at the convention centre, which has hosted major international acts in the past, so a significant facelift will also provide the Gold Coast with an opportunity to attract some of the world's biggest musical acts. These investments will grow gaming tax revenues. We would suggest a portion of gaming tax revenues from the Star Gold Coast operations each year could be reserved to secure, promote, and market new events, conventions, and shows. We propose the fund be managed by Tourism and Events Queensland with participation from the Star. The last element, the third element, covers the new tourism experiences at the Sheraton Grand Mirage Beachfront Resort, an iconic destination in anyone's language. This involves refreshing the existing property, potentially with a new restaurant, bar and gym, while also developing a beach club. This element in its early stages of development, however, we may also seek approvals for a quality low-rise resort development on a site adjoining the existing Sheraton Grand Mirage to include tourism and residential components. Obviously, this level of commitment to the Gold Coast from the Star would require exclusivity arrangements, which we would similarly discuss with the government. Now, moving away from Queensland to New South Wales, we are expecting the Independent Planning Commission to announce in the next few weeks a decision on our tower proposal at the Star Sydney. We are committed to bringing one of the world's most sought-after hotel brands back to Sydney, while also creating a stunning new dining precinct and delivering world-class resort amenities that would resonate globally. This project would also be a catalyst for more than 1,000 jobs. Tourism Australia research forecasts tell us that there is a wave of international visitors who can be drawn to this country if we have the right attractions. More luxury hotel rooms are a major component. Our attempts to boost tourism through the construction of a Ritz-Carlton hotel and apartments met with a very disappointing recommendation to reject from the Department of Planning in New South Wales. We can only hope the challenges we have faced trying to secure approval do not translate into an opportunity missed for Australian tourism. Turning to the 2019 financial year results, and statutory NPAT for the group was $198 million, up 33.7% on the prior year after significant items. In normalised terms, which sees the average win rate of 1.35% applied to the international VIP rebate business rather than the actual win rate of 1.38%, the full year normalised NPAT result was $224 million after equity accounted investments, but before significant items. This was down 8.4% on FY18. Considering the business performance overall and the strength of the company's balance sheet, the board declared a final dividend of 10 cents per share, fully franked. This took total dividends for the year to 20.5 cents per share, fully franked. This total dividend amount is in line with FY18 and reflects a payout ratio of 84% of normalised NPAT. On behalf of the board, I congratulate and thank Matt Bekier and the management team on their dedication to making the Star Entertainment Group Australia's leading integrated resort company and returning value to shareholders. Also, I thank my fellow directors on the company's well-established board of directors for their ongoing commitment. Most importantly today, thank you to all shareholders for your support of the company's vision and strategy. We look forward to another year of growth and continued successful execution of our existing capital works program. In closing, and to mark the first AGM here in Brisbane and many more to come, I'd like to remind you all how the Queen's Wharf project will be at the forefront of an extraordinary transformation for this city of Brisbane. Yes, indeed, capturing the heart of Brisbane. I'll now hand over to our CEO and Managing Director, Matt Bekier. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, John. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm delighted to be here in Brisbane today. It's the city that has offered the Star Entertainment Group the privilege of delivering a truly transformational project for Queensland. Queen's Wharf Brisbane is a once-in-a-lifetime development opportunity. Together with our partners Charter Fook and Far East Consortium, it's a $3.6 billion investment to create a world-class precinct for local, interstate and international visitors. The development has four hotels, 50 restaurants, cafes and bars, 12 football fields of open space, a sky deck overlooking the river and the CBD, a moonlight cinema, a pedestrian bridge over to South Bank, and I hope very much, a zip line across the water. This will be the finest integrated resort in Australia and a tourism and entertainment destination to match the best anywhere around the globe. We won the right to develop Queen's Wharf in 2015. 4 years on, we are on time and on budget to open the doors of the integrated resort in 2022. Demolition and excavation are complete, and structural work is now well underway. We will soon unveil the first completed public spaces, the Mangrove Walk and the Waterline Park. The Queen's Wharf vision is fast becoming reality. Executing on our significant capital works program for Southeast Queensland also continued at the Star Gold Coast. Construction has commenced on a 53-storey mixed-use Dorset Hotel and residential tower. This will deliver a third hotel to the property alongside the Star Grand and the Darling. In November last year, we gained approval for our development master plan for Broadbeach Island from the Queensland Government. This will allow, at our discretion, for the development of a further four towers. In Sydney, the new Grand foyer opened with an art, light and water installation as its showpiece. The Sovereign Resort upgrade is also progressing to plan, with completion expected in the final quarter of FY 2020. As John mentioned earlier, we're waiting to hear whether the Independent Planning Commission will approve our application to develop the Ritz-Carlton Tower at the Star Sydney. It has been a fascinating four-year journey through the department's planning process so far. I will now turn to some of the other significant achievements our company delivered last year, and I'm pleased to say it's quite a long list. The Dow Jones Sustainability Index ranked the Star as the global leader in its casino and gaming category for the fourth successive year. We were also rated as one of the top 25 companies in the world, and second in Australia, for our approach to diversity and inclusion. We achieved silver employer status in the Australian Workplace Equality Index. The Star Culinary Institute now has more than 100 apprentice chefs enrolled. We have committed to an Aboriginal native bee honey production business on Minjeriba, North Stradbroke Island, working alongside the Quandamooka people. Our sustainability initiatives included removing more than 7.5 million plastic straws per year as part of a single-use plastic reduction commitment. The Darling Hotel on the Gold Coast won the Best Deluxe Accommodation at the National Australian Hotels Association Awards for Excellence. The Darling Hotel in Sydney continues to be the only Forbes five-star rated hotel, now the third year in the running, the only one in New South Wales to hold that status. And finally, Paul Carmichael of Momofuku was named Gourmet Traveller's Chef of the Year. Please turn your attention to the screens to see what's behind some of these successes. This really started out of Queen's Wharf. In Queen's Wharf, we'll be having 50 bars and restaurants. The tourists that fly all the way to come to Australia, they don't want to eat what they can eat everywhere else along the way. They want to have an authentic experience in food and in everything else they do. You know, when we, through our food contacts, started to hear more and more about the Australian native honey, we just thought we have to have a part of that action. Thank you. Let me now review our financial results for FY 2019. We had a strong first half and a more challenging second half last year, impacted by domestic consumer sentiment and global economic softening. In this difficult environment, we enjoyed record domestic gaming results, which were underpinned by market share gains at the Gold Coast and in Brisbane, and reasonable growth in Sydney across both slots and tables. Domestic private gaming rooms were the highlight in Sydney, with visitation up 12.4%, compensating for a main gaming floor which was affected by capital works. The international VIP rebate business produced mixed results. While we delivered 10% growth in unique visitation on FY 2018, normalized revenue was down 30.7% on the PCP due to substantially lower spend per customer. Statutory international VIP rebate business revenue declined at a lower rate of 17.6% due to a higher comparable win rate. When macro market conditions improve, we are confident this ongoing increase in unique patrons and our diversification into new geographies and customer segments will drive a return to earnings growth from this business. Operating costs were flat last year. During FY 2019, we also introduced centers of excellence in gaming and marketing to streamline operations and further improve decision-making. This focus on greater efficiency, agility, and outstanding guest service led to a group-wide organizational restructure to reflect the more challenging trading environment. I'm pleased to report that as a business, we have adapted and moved almost seamlessly to this new way of working. Turning to trading in FY 2020, and for the period from the 1st of July to the 21st of October 2019, group domestic revenue is up 1.5% on the PCP, with growth in both Sydney and Queensland. Group international VIP rebate business normalized revenue is up on the PCP for the same period. In this business, front money is flat on the PCP, but a low actual win rate experienced in the FY 2020 year to date is negatively impacting statutory results. De-risking initiatives have been implemented, including restructure benefits of around 45 million dollars annualized run rate by the end of the first half of FY 2020. Normalized group EBITDA for the first half FY 2020 is expected to be between 300 million dollars and 310 million dollars. Our priorities for the 2020 financial year are clear. We plan to execute on the center of excellence operating model and lock in the cost savings, to deliver on the investment strategy, manage the competitive environment, and improve capital efficiency. In closing, I would like to thank the board and the management team for their ongoing support. I also extend my gratitude to our 9,000 team members, whose commitment is key to our ongoing success, to our investors for their continued support, and to the millions of guests who visit us again this year. We hope they continue to enjoy the considerable improvements we are making to our properties. I now pass back to John for the formal business of today's meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Matt. Yes, we now come to the formal business of the meeting. The notice of this meeting was sent to all shareholders on the 18th of September 2019, and copies of the notice were also available in the foyer this morning. I'll take the notice of meeting as read. Before we start on the items of business, I'd like to outline the key procedural aspects of the meeting. First, only shareholders, their appointed proxies, or corporate representatives are entitled to make comments, ask questions, or vote at this meeting. All other attendees are, as always, welcome as observers. Second, to allow the greatest opportunity for all in attendance to participate, any comments or questions must be relevant to the business of the meeting. As in the past, your board and members of the management team will be available after the meeting to speak with you. If you wish to make a comment or ask a question about a specific resolution, please make your way to a microphone when the resolution is being considered. Please show either your green or yellow admission card to our microphone attendant, and they will introduce you. If you have more than one question on an item of business, please ask your questions together. I'll then address each of your questions in turn. Some shareholders have previously submitted their questions on the question form that was provided with the notice of meeting. I will address some of the more frequently raised questions and topics when we get to the relevant item of business. Separate responses have already been provided to other individual queries. Turning to voting, you will need a green card to vote on each resolution. If you are a joint shareholder or you have already voted prior to the meeting, you would have received a yellow non-voting card, which means that you may speak at the meeting but not vote. If you are eligible to vote and you have not received a green card, please see a representative of Link Market Services in the foyer. As a reminder, visitors holding a red card are not eligible to vote or speak at this meeting. As stated in the notice of meeting, voting on each of the resolutions will be conducted by poll. This ensures fairness to all shareholders as it takes into account all direct votes, proxy votes, and votes on the floor. I will now open the poll. If you need to leave early, you can place your completed voting card in one of the ballot boxes near the exit. If you have any questions about how to complete the voting card, again, please see a Link Market Services representative here today. In relation to the items of business to be considered today, the resolutions in items 2 to 5 are ordinary resolutions that require a majority of votes in favour of the resolution. As we commence discussion on each item in the notice of meeting, the total number of valid proxy votes and direct votes received for that item and how those votes have been directed will be displayed on the screen behind me. The results of the poll will be released to the ASX later today after the votes have been counted. I now turn to the individual items of business in the order set out in the notice of meeting. The first item on the agenda is to receive and consider the financial statements, the director's report, and the auditor's report for the year ended the 30th of June 2019. The financial statements were approved by the directors and audited by Ernst & Young. There will be no voting on this item as it is a discussion item only. However, in a moment, I will invite your questions and comments. As mentioned earlier, Megan Wilson, the Ernst & Young partner responsible for the audit, is present today and available to answer any questions relevant to the conduct of the audit and the preparation and content of the auditor's report. Shareholders had the opportunity to submit written questions to the auditor prior to the meeting. No questions for the auditor were received. As I've done in previous years, I would like to respond to some key themes which have been raised in shareholder questions and feedback received before the meeting. Perhaps unsurprisingly, a key theme was our efforts in relation to sustainability matters. Our sustainability strategy continues to focus upon material and environmental issues that affect our business, and this strategy has been integrated right across our operations and supported by our executive committee and the board. We continue to make direct investments into our properties to build more sustainability and to maximise operational efficiencies to reduce energy, water and carbon emissions. We are very proud to say that for the past 4 years, the annual Dow Jones Sustainability Index assessment has acknowledged our company, Star Entertainment Group, as the global leader in the casino and gaming industry, and we also achieved the highest scores within the industry overall for social and environmental performance. The initiatives undertaken in FY19 to deliver on our sustainability strategy are detailed in the annual report and demonstrate the focus given to sustainability issues, particularly responsible gambling, climate change, and investing in renewable energy. I will now move straight to inviting questions about the financial statements, the director's report, and the auditor's report. This is your opportunity as shareholders to ask questions or make comments about the management of the company or the company's operations in the last financial year, and to hear directly from your chairman, the board and executive management members. Open for questions.
Yes, Ian Timmons is my name. I've made it clear in previous AGMs, I believe the company would be better served with a completely new board. Unfortunately, control of that situation lies in the hands of a big institution with just 82 holders controlling about 87% of the shares. So the average shareholder has little to say in that. Now, this is the first time I've been to Brisbane Casino and I don't know what happens here, so most of my comments may relate to issues at the Gold Coast. Firstly, I raised the matter of the reported $43.2 million that the casino was chasing from an overseas losing high roller. 7 years ago, in 2012, the casino attempted to recover over $22 million from other overseas players who were able to manipulate the system. A prudent board would have ensured then that there would be no repeat of that situation. One could be forgiven for assuming that no such effective controls were put in place, and shareholders would like to know if any of this latest $43 million has been recovered so far and what steps have been taken to assure there is no repeat. It does not look good for the board. I'll go on. I have to once again raise an issue that I raised a year ago without success. The absurd system of accumulating points towards players' cards. People are completely confused and upset by the new system of rolling points. It's very common for a player to generate points one day, only to find the following day that they have fewer points than they had at the start of the previous day. And I have a personal example here of where it shows I have fewer points than I had 8 days earlier. People want certainty. They want to know they are moving forward, as was the case with the former system. The new system is rubbish and upsetting to the majority of patrons. After I raised it last year, I was told the figure was confusing and would be better left off the printout. It's still there and it's still confusing. Star recently changed the machines, which cash tickets so that they can only dispense notes, and any amount that requires a payment involving coins now has another ticket printed for the coin. Players then have to take that ticket to the cashiers to redeem it, effectively making the machines redundant in the majority of cases. People use the machines to avoid queues at the cashiers, but now they are forced to use a cashier, so the queues at the cashiers can get even longer. I recently stood in a queue whilst the cashier had to process around 20 such tickets from one patron. Some people leave the tickets in the machines, so the person following doesn't know if they've forgotten or simply don't want the change. But if they touch the ticket, they can possibly be accused of theft if they don't go and hand it in. How absurd. The policy is particularly upsetting for patrons in the Gold Card Oasis, which does not have a cashier until later in the day. These patrons then have to traipse down to cash in their tickets. So once again, Star make life difficult for patrons for absolutely no good reason. And you continue to increase the minimum bets on table games and wonder why the place is almost deserted much of the day. For example, you change the minimum for an outside bet on the 00 table, roulette tables from $10 to $25, then the same as the $10 single zero table, then sometimes don't open the single zero table and force people into the 00 tables. There are other similar examples. And the endless renovations of building that goes on Star Gold Coast. Star apparently believes that patrons are happy to visit and constantly find large sections inside closed off or moved. You can't even keep some of your restaurants open because of the many locals refuse to go to the place. I was assured after the last AGM, and I also raised this point, that all of the internal building work would be completed by last November. That has proved not to be the case. Just a couple of weeks ago, patrons had to try to watch the movies with workers operating a jackhammer overhead, demolishing a stairwell. And often we're told the reason for the change is that Star Sydney makes decisions, which then has to be adopted across all sites. A Platinum Card friend visited Sydney some time back and asked for a card to record the roulette draws. He was told they were no longer issued, and when he asked why, the reply was, because the casino doesn't want players to win. I don't know if that was a flippant response or a policy articulated at a high level, but it certainly has been repeated many times over. Star doesn't consider the ramifications of its decisions on the playing public, then wonders why many people would like to see a second casino on the coast. Decisions are made by statistics people who aren't even on site. I was told one game wasn't open because few people played it, but few people could play it because it was rarely open. There's been three heads at the Gold Coast over the past year or so, and the impression given is they have been tasked to cut costs as opposed to increasing patronage. Star has been given a valuable monopoly in the area, but is penny-pinching its way to having that monopoly broken down with the entry of new casinos. And how many of the board members have actually bothered to wander around the casino and simply ask patrons what they think about the place? I would be surprised if any of them have. I've been told that the company is making money, so what's the problem? That may be so, but if more consideration was given to the effects of decisions on patrons, particularly local patrons, who provide the biggest returns, potentially a good deal more money could be generated. And the news that the CEO sold 200,000 shares at $4.56 each, and that's over 900,000 in late April, just a few weeks before Star's shares slumped to $3.80 in early June, following announcement of a softening in trading conditions, stunned many shareholders who took a big hit. It would be interesting to know what the board's reaction to this was to this sale. I could go on, but I know I'll achieve nothing, and nobody will give any answers to the shareholders. Thank you.
Thanks, Ian. There's quite a shopping list there, I've got to say. I'll deal with the matters that I think are relevant to this meeting, and a number of the items you've raised we can deal with after the meeting.
You always say, but I never hear from anyone.
Well, Ian, I'm sure that Jeff Hogg and Greg Hawkins and the management team we'll meet with you after this meeting to deal with, as I said, quite a number of matters that you've raised just now. Your opening statement that you had no confidence in the board and that the board should be kicked out, basically. Well, same thing. That's why we have AGMs. And we've got two directors standing for re-election today. There is a thing called corporate democracy, and it is at work today. In terms of bad debts, and you mentioned one large debtor, and you went back some years to a previous bad debt. Which was regrettable. There were many lessons learnt from that in our processes and procedures and our credit controls. And oversight by the board and management is at a very strong level. This particular gamer is being pursued through the courts, both in Singapore and in Brisbane. And we will be attending to whatever provisions might need to be taken once we have exhausted every possible means of recovery.
I've been told unofficially that there is a huge amount of money owing by overseas gamblers, not just that 43.2. Can you attest to that?
Well, whatever you've heard unofficially is wrong.
Okay.
The other matters regarding loyalty, tickets, Oasis, minimum bets, our restaurants, some centralisation decisions that have been taken, and as to whether any of the board have actually walked around the property, well, I can answer that and say many, many times. I've been to the Star Gold Coast this year about 15, 20 times.
And I've seen you there, but I haven't seen you talking to any of the players. I've seen you walking around there.
Well, you can always say hello. Ian, I know what you look like. You can always say hello.
I have to get past all the followers and
No, I'm always by myself. The only protection I have is my wife. We hear you, Ian, and those operational matters you've raised will be attended to in discussion with you straight after this meeting. Other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I have proxy holder Australian Shareholders Association representative Silvana Eccles.
Good morning, Silvana.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. As you're aware, I'm here on behalf of Carol Limmer, who's the monitor for the Australian Shareholders Association. But I'm also here representing 221 shareholders who have appointed ASA as their proxy. We would firstly like to compliment the STAR on their corporate governance and sustainability reports, particularly in regard to aspects such as the diversity, the environment, your long-term focus and the support you provide in the communities where you are located. I have a couple of questions. The first one relates to your negotiation with the Queensland Government and in light that it's been going for 7 years. How long do you think it might take to get to an outcome? That's question one. Question two, understand that you'll get the receive the notification from New South Wales in regard to your Ritz-Carlton development. I'm assuming you're optimistic, but in the scenario that it wasn't forthcoming, do you have a fallback position? For example, we understand that one of the issues is the height of the building. Do you have a fallback position to reduce the height or any other fallback positions? And thirdly, Crown's expected to open their casino in Barangaroo next year, and so will bring competition to your Sydney assets. What mitigation strategies do you have in place?
Thank you very much. Taking them in the order that you've asked them, the first one, the outcome in Queensland, to the proposal we've put forward today, and we have over time made the Queensland Government aware of what we would be putting up. I'd love to have a crystal ball that could accurately predict timing. As I said around the dinner table last night to my fellow board members, that I'd love to see it done and dusted by the end of November. But that's not a prediction. The proposal's been put forward in good faith. It's the real deal, and it's real money and real investment. But governments have their processes. There are probity issues. There are there's a bureaucracy that works at a certain pace, but ultimately the decision lies with the Premier and the Cabinet. I remain optimistic that we will get the outcome we're seeking. In what time frame, I'm just not sure. In terms of the Ritz-Carlton, as I said in my address today, we're disappointed that our proposal was rejected by the New South Wales Planning Department. It was a four-year process where we dotted I's and crossed T's and had no inkling that we were going to have our proposal rejected. Nonetheless, we dusted ourselves off and we have remained in the game, and the IPC is still deliberating, probably a few more weeks. We do have a plan B and probably a plan C, to tell the truth. But a plan B would be the current height, as approved by the design panel, was 237 metres. We have offered to lower that to 213, and that's on the table. It's guesswork as to what the IPC are going to decide. So that 237 versus 213, that's about 8 floors, so that's quite a concession for us, particularly in financial terms. But beyond that, there is an opportunity for a rezoning of the area such that there's more distinction between Pyrmont and Darling Harbour. If that is the case, then our Plan C could be unveiled, but it would likely take a couple of years. In terms of Crown, yes, we know they're coming, and we've known for some years. We are battle ready. We've worked assiduously in the last 5 or 6 years to ensure that Star Sydney is in great shape, and the Sovereign Resorts, which will open next May, will be an absolute revelation. It's a wonderful project for our top customers, and I think when we unveil it in May, it'll be pretty breathtaking. And you know, the overall look and feel of the property, new bars, new restaurants. We have the Lyric Theatre, which just goes extraordinarily well in terms of traffic, and we have more offerings in food and beverage and restaurants that will all be open and well before Barangaroo is open. Look, we've factored in everything we possibly can in our five-year plan for the arrival of Crown. So we are as well prepared as we possibly can be. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to introduce Roman Christoff, shareholder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to thank you, the board, and for your hard work. Also, I would like to thank Mr. Jeff Hogg, the Group Executive Operations, his PA, Mrs. Jackie Tosh, his excellent team, and Mr. Greg Hopkins, the Chief Casino Officer, and his team. This was a difficult year for our company. Our share price was smashed. Our VIPs continue to flee to other casinos. Glitches continue to constantly appear, not only on the gaming floor, but now also in our restaurants. I'm a software engineer with over 39 years experience, the owner of two software companies. And I never seen so many glitches in one company that continues. Some of the problems could be fixed with one email or 10 minutes training. Yet, it still has taken over 2 years to identify the problem, and I'm still advising VIP staff on how to improve response time. I also got a shock when my conversation with one of our managers who is looking after our VIP's benefits, who declare, and I'm quote, "Our clients are equal. Doesn't matter if they are Diamond International members or Silver members, all equal." End of quote. I could not sleep for a week after this declaration. I was born in communist country and lived there in my childhood. The official declaration of the communist regime is that everyone is equal, but those who live in under communist regime know that some are more equal than others. In our business, our Diamond members, who bring millions of dollars to our to us, deserve much more than any other member. Otherwise, they will leave us. In my previous address at last AGM, and I quote, "Crown Casino offer our VIP guests limousine service to airport, private jets to Melbourne, limousine service from airport, and the best room in the Crown. All this for free." End of quote. Our management team created a special team to bring our VIPs member to Gold Coast, to our beautiful Darling Hotel. But a couple months ago, this team was retrenched. They was doing a good job, but instead of sending them, they got fired. Can I ask you, Mr. Chairman, to look into it? Also, can I ask you, Mr. Chairman, to look into our IT department, as our glitches have been happening for too long? Also, I want to ask our shareholders to take part in our company future. Our management have a great vision for our company, Queen Wharf Resort, Ritz-Carlton Project, etc. I sent a petition to approve the Ritz-Carlton Project by New South Wales government. This project, if approved, will distinct our building from any other building in Sydney. To finish on a good note, I would like to thank our hotel management that are doing a great job. Our darling hotel, both in Sydney and Gold Coast, are absolutely magnificent, as you show it on your picture. And our darling hotel in Sydney was again highlighted by Forbes Travel Guide as its annual 2019 Star Award winners, bestowing the highest ranking of 5 stars to the darling. The first and only hotel to receive top honors and only hotel in Australia to be honored 3 years in a row, and I'm sure that we'll return next year. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Roman. And on behalf of the many people that you did thank, and on behalf of the board, we genuinely appreciate your comments and your feedback and input. I can assure you the board and management are as sensitive as our investors are to the share price, and when it fell to a unacceptable low, every effort's been made to restore it, and I'm pleased to say it is heading in the right direction. The number of things that you've raised, again, it would be more efficient and useful if we took those offline with, you know, Greg Hawkins in particular, and George Hughes, our Chief Marketing Officer. And then you referenced, you know, what Crown does versus us. It's not particularly useful here today to be comparing ourselves with Crown. There's certainly differences in the way we operate. But as Matt today, our Chief Executive, has listed out, you know, what we've done over the past 12 months and where we've come from in the last 7 or 8 years of our existence, we're in a lot better shape than when we were, say, in our first AGM that I chaired in 2012. We aren't perfect, and there's some distance to go, but the progress we are making is discernible, and we're hopeful that those improvements will be reflected in an improved share price, which will make the board, the management, and all our investors happy. But again, thank you very much, Roman, for your very useful feedback. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But I just want, again, to highlight, I raised it 3 years. The glitch started about 4 years ago. I raised it 3 years ago. They still continue. If you remember in Sydney, nothing worked. All the system, you all the time was laughing, it was making a joke. But now it's not a joke anymore. I highlighted it last year at the Gold Coast. Again, glitches continue. Glitches just not... Again, I'm very surprised. I'm, as I said, 39-year software engineer. It's need to be stopped at some stage. Other way, we were getting laughing at the community, IT community. They're laughing. Something needs to be done, Mr. Chairman.
No, we hear you. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you. More questions?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce shareholder Graydon Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. And congratulations on the projects you've got up and going. My question is in relation to good governance with regards to the technical construction certification of these. We've got $3.6 billion happening just down the road. That equates to equivalent to the Cross River Rail. As evident with the likes of WestConnex in Sydney, EastLink in Melbourne, and Cross River Rail in Queensland, most government projects or PPP projects employ independent certification on the electrics, mechanicals and the civil. I think we've all seen the impacts upon civil with the Opal Towers in Sydney, having shonky certifiers that aren't accredited to relevant institutional boards, just signing off on work. My question is in relation to reducing the OPEX ongoing OPEX, as evidenced with the squeaky door opener here, right here in the Western. Small cost. A finished building with poor quality. Through to, are you going to appoint or engage independent certification to reduce the CAPEX and the ongoing OPEX for your $3.6 billion construction? As we know, CAPEX blows out by at least 20% when you do not employ independent certification. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Just turning to the overall governance of Queen's Wharf, Destination Brisbane Consortium is the entity that is responsible for the delivery of the Queen's Wharf project. It is a owned Destination Brisbane Consortium, 50% owned by Star, 25% by Chow Tai Fook, and 25% by Far East Consortium. The board of Destination Brisbane, representing Star, is Matt Beckier and myself, and then a representative each of Chow Tai Fook and Far East Consortium. There is a project control group that sits underneath that, comprised of management. Our project manager for the Queen's Wharf project, Simon Crooks, is here today. And on the question about independence certification, Matt, I'll throw to you.
Thank you, Chairman. And Graham, so we have a contract with the Queensland Government that specifies the quality and the delivery of certain components of the project. That has to be verified and certified by third parties. So we are doing everything according to the book. And we can, you know, talk to you about who exactly we're using for those processes. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I have James Benbrook, a shareholder.
Sorry, I've just got two really simple questions. You talked a lot about in your reports and AGM and all the rest of it about the hard assets for the group, which are very important, the destinations that people go to. Given the focus of younger people on, I guess, the digital world, is there going to be a stronger focus on that space to increase patronage over the coming years? And the second question I had was, given the possible changes to the lockout laws and serving of alcohol after midnight in Sydney, which obviously Star has been a major benefactor of over the last few years without patrons being able to purchase that anywhere else, if those laws are relaxed, do you expect that to impact the bottom line for the group?
Thank you. On the customer mix, and are we focusing on a broader cross-section, the answer is very much yes. George Hughes, our Chief Marketing Officer, will be happy to elaborate after the meeting, but our marketing plans, strategies and tactics, you know, take in Generation Y, and as we've both at the as an employer and also with our customer base, we're very sensitive and acutely aware of the need for generational change. In terms of the mooted changes to the lockout laws, firstly, it's a bit of a myth that we've been the beneficiaries of the lockout laws. That was, you know, heavily promoted by parties that had a particular purpose in promoting it, that when the lockout laws came, then everyone walked across the Pyrmont Bridge to our place. It happened for about 3 months, and our security forces were beefed up dramatically to deal with it, but you know, inebriated people or underage people or anyone who wasn't in fit shape to get in didn't get in, so they stopped. They stopped coming. So the mooted benefit that we've received it was not factual. The Look, we're very supportive of a balanced view of some lessening of the lockout laws to broadly have Sydney and the CBD a more lively, entertaining place in the evening. And, you know, we're in the CBD, very short walk away from the central CBD, and we will continue to provide very competitive food, beverage, hotels, gaming, and a place. We're far more than a casino, put it that way. So I think we're in, when the changes, whatever they are, come to the lockout laws, we're well prepared to cope. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to introduce Rad Pilgic, attending today's meeting as a shareholder.
Good morning. My daughter told me to slip this in. She works at the Power of Tower. Will there be affordable eateries at the Wolf Street? I normally don't like speaking in public, but I've approached a number of boards in different companies to implement some changes when we're displaying the remuneration and the granting of rights to the CEO. So just forgive me, I'm a nervy type of bloke, but I'm trying to get the message across. Like one gentleman pointed out, the top 20 have 84% of voting power. If we consider direct owners, I'm talking direct owners, not people hidden in the custodian, nominee company and the super companies, if holding up their fly field, they would comprise of 68,430 individual or 93% of the company's direct owners. That's if my figures are right, I think they are. If every one of these owners voted against the remuneration, it would still pass, as it amounts to them simply going through the motion of voting. The closest analogy that I can think of this is similar to a penthouse owner dictating to large number of unit or apartment owners on how the body corporate funds are to be spent. I'm convinced that you make it your business to be aware that generally, from this is information that I gathered from Computershare and Link Market, only about 4 to 5% of eligible voters bother to vote, and that's because of the polling voting system. Because most people I speak to say the result is decided by the big end of town. What I'm proposing is basically similar to a show of hands, extra details. Count them as individuals. Because all I see is poll voting, a result which just swamps everyone out. But most of the true owners don't see how they voted. Like I'd like to see the poll voting result, another column of direct votes for and against, and so we could see if there's a great divergency between the top 20 companies and the actual shareholders. And if there's a big divergence, I'm asking the board to look into it. Why are the small shareholders unhappy?
Thank you.
I'd like to have the opportunity to respond to whatever you come up with, please.
Well, our share register is what it is. It's not dissimilar to many companies in the top 100 with institutional investors comprising over 50% and retail investors making up the rest. From our perspective, at an ethical and an integrity level, everyone is treated the same. Whether you're an institutional investor or a small shareholder, your vote at an AGM is important, and there are ways and means provided within the Corporations Act, ASIC and ASX, to enable shareholders to have their say. Happy to take on board further discussions and deliberations around the suggestions you've made, but you know, our AGMs are well attended. There are proxy firms that operate efficiently and effectively that are available also to retail investors. So, you know, for today's purposes, I think we're running the AGM according to the rules that exist. Thank you. Any other questions?
Can I respond to something to you, what you said?
Yes, we've undertaken to have a look at your suggestion.
I'd like to see you have show some leadership and do it, so people, because the average shareholder sees that the whole system's rigged.
Can
I just read this out, please? Within the top 20 shareholders who have shareholders in our company, if you look at some of them, they vote in a similar fashion to the way we vote here through the poll. It would be in this company's board of directors and management interest to support such a self-serving method and vote in favour of these resolutions, purely for their fellow directors and the management team in these other companies. AMP is a classic one. They own shares here, and they vote in a similar fashion as we do. They are unlikely to vote against these resolutions except during extremely poor performance, which affects their company's outcome. We can't, unless one of these top 20s get on board, we can't even get onto the 25% spill motion if we tried.
Well, again, as I mentioned before, corporate democracy
it's not
is...
But we should change it.
Now, look at...
And you people, all I'm asking as an advisory, to put a separate column and say the poll voting result was such and such percentage, the direct vote was such and such a percentage for and against, because as a member of, within my industry, I don't get a choice to vote. I've never been offered a choice to vote. Once I join my super, I forego my voting rights, and only one person within the super organisation represents me.
Well, you can withdraw your investment in the super fund and invest directly. But look, the issue you've raised is far-reaching for corporate Australia, and we have undertaken today to look into your suggestion. So thank you. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce Corporate Representative Chris Lotz for shareholder Super Lotz Proprietary Limited.
Welcome to you all, the board, for coming to Queensland. I've just got a couple of questions. First of all, the gentleman that was referring to the rewards program, I agree and endorse what he says. Some of the things in that system, if you equate it to a similar loyalty program, are quite inferior. The way that the point system is calculated, my instance today, I've lost 200 points today, it should change. It should just go back to what it used to be. Once you've got a certain number of points, then you should qualify for the relevant card. That's just a slight point. The second point is also on the way that the finances are worked out in the company. I wonder what sort of amount of money is actually allocated to the provision of alcohol under the system, because I see quite a few people that sit there all day and drink quite heavily. If you don't drink and you don't have a car, you live in Brisbane, you're losing customers and clients, because they see that the system is sort of like has been changed. We used to have all sorts of other things that were incentives to be a member of the reward system. Some of those things should really be looked at and brought back. And also the gentleman that referred to the gaming machines and some of the systems that you've got in place when you put your card in the system, into it, they're broke for weeks on end sometimes. I refer, like yesterday, I went into the casino yesterday and tried to find out what my points total was, swiped my card, and the system's down. And then when the system was back up, it sort of like said, well, we can't actually work out your points. So I just think that you need to look at that. The other question I'd like to say is, as a shareholder, why don't we have a correlation between shareholders, individual shareholders, and the way the points system works? If you're a shareholder, surely you should get some additional benefits, i.e. discounts on hotel stays, discounts on food if you use the restaurants, because at the moment, as a shareholder, you don't. So as a board, I'd like to consider giving us, the shareholders, the people that actually care about the company, some sort of reward for being a shareholder, apart from the good efforts that you've done in increasing the share price recently. That's great. And I think we're going in the right direction, because obviously Queensland is the place that is going to push our company forward. Thank you.
No, thank you. A number of points you've raised, and some of them were raised earlier, you know, the reward system, and your feeling that was the point system we used was inferior. We'll take that on board outside the meeting. The gaming machines often not being in service, and shareholder benefits, we're happy to take that on after the meeting. Matt?
Thank you, John. Just on the point about the 360 days rolling points, we've heard a lot of our guests raise the same point. That's going to be changed next year.
Oh, great.
We're working on that. Thank you.
That's good. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
As there are no more questions, I'll now move to the next two items on the agenda. These items relate to the election and re-election of directors. The two directors standing for re-election at this meeting, Mr. Gerard Bradley and Mr. Richard Shepherd, who are retiring in the normal course of rotation. The resolutions relating to the re-elections are both ordinary resolutions which require a majority of votes cast by shareholders entitled to vote on the resolution or by their appointed proxy or authorised representative. Each of the directors, other than the relevant director standing for election or re-election, recommends the election and re-election of each of the other directors. I now turn to the individual directors. Item two of the agenda is the re-election of Mr. Gerard Bradley as a director of the company. Gerard retires in accordance with the company's constitution and, being eligible, offers himself for re-election. Gerard was appointed as a NED in May 2013 and was last re-elected as a director at the 2016 AGM. Gerard is the chair of the Risk and Compliance Committee. He is currently also a member of the Audit Committee and the Investment and Capital Expenditure Review Committee. Details of Gerard's experience are included in the Director's Report section of the Annual Report. As is customary for directors seeking re-election, I welcome Gerard to address shareholders in attendance with a few words. Gerard.
Thank you, John, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm pleased to have been a member of the Star Entertainment Group Board since May 2013, and that's been a period of really strong growth and development. My executive background lies in finance. I've over 35 years' experience in Queensland and South Australian Treasury departments, including 14 years as Queensland's Under-Treasurer. My former positions involved responsibility for preparation and management of the state budget and the fiscal and economic development of the state. I've also had extensive commercial experience in infrastructure funding and restructuring of government entities. I've previously served as the chairman of the Board of Trustees at QSuper and as a non-executive director on a number of major government, financial and commercial companies. The understanding and experience I've gained with government and business, together with my finance background and qualifications, enables me to provide input to the important issues which are being considered by the board. I'm currently the chairman of the Queensland Treasury Corporation, which is the central borrowing authority and corporate treasury for the Queensland public sector, with responsibility for managing a $100 billion balance sheet for the state. I'm also a non-executive director of another ASX-listed company, Pinnacle Investment Management Group Limited, which is a leading Australian-based multi-affiliate investment management firm with over $55 billion in funds under management in a diverse range of asset classes. I chair Pinnacle's Audit, Compliance and Risk Management Committee. I'm also a director of the board of the Winston Churchill Memorial Trust, which oversees the trust's role of providing Churchill fellowships for Australians to travel overseas to undertake research in their chosen field. I think this year we've awarded around 100 fellowships to Australians, including a number in Queensland. Like the gaming sector, the financial services sector is extensively regulated and involves heavy emphasis on risk management. My executive background in finance has provided me with relevant experience that assists me in performing the role of Chair of STAR's Risk and Compliance Committee. With your support, I look forward to continuing to serve on the board of your company as it seeks to deliver our vision to be Australia's leading integrated resort company. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jared. Details of valid proxies and direct votes in respect to this item of business are set out on the screen. Before moving to the re-election of Mr. Jared Bradley, are there any questions? As there are no questions, I now put the motion to approve item two, that Mr. Jared Bradley be re-elected as a director of the company. I confirm that the board fully supports the re-election of Jared as a director. As I mentioned earlier, I have called a poll in relation to all items of business. If you wish, you may mark your voting card now. Please tick one box next to item two and hold on to your voting card until the end of the meeting. Item three of the agenda is the election of Mr. Richard Shepherd as a director of the company. Richard joined the board as a NED on the 3rd of March 2013 and was last re-elected as a director at the 2016 AGM. Richard is currently the chair of the Investment and Capital Expenditure Review Committee. He is also a member of the Risk and Compliance Committee and the Audit Committee. Details of Richard's experience are included in the director's report section of the annual report. I welcome Richard to say a few words.
Thank you, John, and good afternoon, everybody. As the chairman mentioned, I've been on the board since 2013, and my main background and experience is in the banking and finance sector, which includes a long career of over 30 years with Macquarie Group Limited, where I ended up some years ago as managing director and chief executive of Macquarie Bank Limited, which is the banking arm of the Macquarie Group. While there, I also chaired the boards of a number of Macquarie's listed entities, mainly in real estate and infrastructure, airports, that sort of thing. And for a period of time, I also served as chairman of the Commonwealth Government's Financial Sector Advisory Council. In terms of current roles, I'm the chairman of another stock exchange listed entity, which is the Dexus Property Group, which manages around $30 billion, manages and owns around $30 billion of office buildings, industrial and shopping centre properties around Australia, including a number of the large buildings near where we are in Brisbane today. And I'm also on the board of Snowy Hydro Limited, which operates the Snowy Martins hydroelectricity scheme. I'm also a director of the Bradman Foundation, which operates the Bradman Museum in the town of Barrel outside Sydney, to which I warmly recommend that you all visit at some stage. As the chairman also mentioned, I am chairman of the group's Investment and Capital Expenditure Review Committee, and as you've heard, the group's involved in some $7 billion of capital expenditure projects around the business, some of which involved joint ventures with our joint venture partners, and subject to negotiations with the government, there's more to come. The role of the Investment and Capital Expenditure Review Committee is to review those projects with management and then make recommendations as appropriate to the board and to monitor their progress. And I'm pleased to report that these projects are being well executed, well managed, on track, and importantly, one of the things we also monitor is that they're being delivered with a good safety record. I should also mention in response to one of the questions today, I do walk around the casino along with the other directors, but I also walk around the construction sites, the restaurants, the hotel rooms, the kitchens, the loading bays, the training centres, and I do regard that sort of direct interaction with the properties and the people who work in them and the people who attend them is very important. So subject to your support today, I look forward to playing a continued role in your company. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard. Details of valid proxies and direct votes in respect to this item of business are again set out on the screen. Are there any questions on this item? As there are no questions, I now put the motion to approve item 3, that Richard Shepherd be elected as a director of the company. I confirm that the board fully supports the election of Richard as a director. If you wish, you may mark your voting card now. Please tick one box next to item 3. I'll now turn to the next two items of business. Items 4 and 5 relate to the remuneration report and the grant of performance rights to the Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer. As disclosed in the notice of meeting, there are no voting restrictions applicable to these items. Votes cast on items 4 and 5 by relevant key management personnel or their closely related parties will be excluded unless they are holding directed proxies. As indicated in the notice of meeting, I intend to vote all undirected proxies in favour of items 4 and 5. Turning now to item 4, the item of business is the advisory resolution to adopt the company's remuneration report in respect of the year ended 30th of June 2019. The remuneration report forms part of the director's report and can be found in the 2019 annual report. The report contains considerable detail about the company's remuneration strategy and policy and directors' and executives' remuneration. I note that at law, the shareholder vote on this resolution is advisory only and does not bind the directors or the company. However, as a board, we take the level of support and the matters raised very seriously. I'm pleased to advise that since this requirement was introduced, the company has consistently received favourable votes for its annual remuneration reports. For the 2018 remuneration report, 98.63% of votes were in favour. Details of valid proxies and direct votes in respect to this item of business are set out on the screen. I now invite any questions regarding the company's 2019 remuneration report.
Mr. Chairman, Sylvana Eccles, Australian Shareholders Association.
Mr. Chairman, this is a comment, not a question, as Carol has asked that I record that ASA is pleased to see the change from moderated market value to face value for calculation of allocation of the long-term performance share rights, which is in accordance with the ASA's voting guidelines. So thank you.
I will thank the ASA and thank Carol for her sage advice. Further questions?
Mr. Chairman, Rad Piljik, shareholder.
Well, this is it's more of a comment. Excuse me, but I need to... I have concerns with the voting powers of the custodian, nominees and superannuation entities or a person's capacity to exercise a degree of influence over securities. It encompasses connection or power wider than ownership. It also would be a small way to... my previous comment, what I said, about another column, it also would be a small way to redress the failures of the previous companies and security advisory committees to achieve its aim. The advisory committee considers that the rules governing shareholders' participation should facilitate the efficient determination of the will of the majority of shareholders. It mentioned shareholders, not shareholdings. Some of the comments that came out of the Royal Commission may infer that using external remuneration advisors' services recommendation may be a flawed approach because it has been proven that they could be using historically tainted database as a guide to current remuneration trends, especially when you consider what the NAB chairman mentioned at the Royal Commission on rewards given to executive teams without meeting targets. This would suggest that we need a fresh approach when it relates to voting on remuneration and other incentives by having a voting system that doesn't rely on shareholding but actually shareholders. Thank you.
No, thank you. Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce shareholder Mr. Neil Davis.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Neil.
Mr. Chairman, you've put up on the screen the actual results before people have actually voted in this thing. Now, that influences people here. And I don't approve of that. I think you should keep it. And after people have had their chance to vote, you then put it up. It would be interesting if everyone here actually voted against that just to see whether we had any influence. Now, really, I'm against the remuneration of a lot of companies because they are over-remunerating many of their executives. And I also think that the short-term incentive plans and so on are also open to overpaying people. And I just think that we should reflect on that a fair bit because I think this country needs to do that. I didn't get up quick enough to have a talk about something before, but I want to mention this. Have you, as a board, carefully looked at the cladding issue that is raging at present throughout the country and across the world, to make sure that whatever is put into that building is of the best possible material to avoid a catastrophe? And I hope the board has reviewed the contract to make damn sure that that won't happen to the constructions that you are envisaging happening within the next few years.
That is the case.
Thank you.
There are any more questions?
No, it's not really a question. I'm just supporting the gentleman over here, what his comments were made about the voting.
We're probably at a point where
all right.
We need to ask questions rather than make comments.
We should do the federal and state election like that at each polling booth, have a running tally, and then decide.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that. Are there any more questions? As there are no more questions, I now move that the remuneration report in respect of the year ended 30th of June be adopted. If you wish, you may mark your voting card now. Please tick one box next to item 4 and hold on to your voting card until the end of the meeting. The last item of business relates to the proposal to grant performance rights to Matt Beckier, the company's Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer. It's proposed that the shareholders approve the grant to Matt of a long-term incentive award equivalent to $2.9 million, which equates to 691,216 performance rights. The notice of meeting contains significant detail about the performance rights proposed to be granted to Matt under the company's long-term performance plan. As described in the notice of meeting, the number of performance rights is determined based on the formula of $2.9 million divided by the face value of a performance right as at the 25th of September 2019, which is $4.20 per performance right. The performance rights may vest on the 25th of September 2023, subject to the satisfaction of applicable performance hurdles. If the performance hurdles have not been met on that test date, then any unvested performance rights will lapse. The equally weighted performance hurdles which apply in respect of the grant of these performance rights are relative total shareholder return, TSR, earnings per share, EPS, and return on invested capital, commonly described as ROIC. Details of the performance hurdles are set out in the notice of meeting. Details of valid proxies and direct votes in respect to this item of business are set out on the screen. Are there any questions on this item?
I'm talking about the LTI. It mentions that it's the market capitalisation in the S&P and AX 100. Is that the whole index?
That's the top 100.
Yeah, the whole index.
Yep.
Well,
for the top 100.
I tried to do a bit of research about Echo and that. Previously, we sort of went more with specific companies that, as being the peer comparator group. It appears that we're broadening it for some reason. There seems to be a trend amongst a lot of companies where they just broaden this thing. They're not actually competing against a select group of peers. So I'd like to say this. I find it too simply broad, and it gives the board of directors greater flexibility to pick and choose which companies can be used to ensure maximising the chances of the CEO getting closer to the LTI target. This proposal allows a greater scope for fiddling the books. The Wall Street Journal mentions that the following companies should be part of our comparative peer group, or it mentions as part of who we're competing against. They mentioned TAB, Crown, Jumbo, DNA, I'm not too sure who they are. Listed company by market capitalisation. I would have thought we would limit our thing to the integrated resorts and gaming and entertainer and hospitality service. This is my interpretation. I'm a bit of a novice shareholder. I don't make too much money from investing in shares. I'm showing more interest in being stirring you people up. The board proposal is similar to a novice partaking in the share market being told to diversify to minimise losses. This in reality is diversification to ensure maximising the CEO rewards, especially during times of poor performance. It's, from my point of view, it's during these cyclic downturns when management competence and competitiveness comes to the fore to demonstrate his or her worth and not simply amble along during this sector's uptrend. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Well, as there are no more questions, I now move that approval be given to the grant of 691,216 performance rights to the Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer, Matt Beckier, under the long-term performance plan and on the basis described in the explanatory memorandum contained in the notice of meeting. The directors unanimously recommend that shareholders vote in favour of this resolution. Please mark your voting card now by ticking one box next to item five. I confirm that we will now conduct a poll in relation to all items of business, that is items 2 to 5. Upon entering the meeting, all shareholders and appointed proxy holders who are eligible to vote at the meeting received a green admission card. This card is in is your ballot paper and contains all resolutions of this meeting. Proxy holders who hold open votes will need to record a vote in favour or against the resolution on the ballot paper. If the shareholder appointing the proxy has given directions on the proxy form as to how to vote, the proxy should vote, then the vote will already be recorded in accordance with that direction. You need only vote those open votes on the voting card. I ask that if you have not already done so, you record your vote by placing a mark in the relevant box next to each resolution. Once you have completed the voting paper, you may place it into one of the ballot boxes held by the share registry staff or place it in one of the ballot boxes near the exit. The returning officer appointed for the poll will conduct a review of the poll papers and procedures before a determination of the results is made. The results of the poll will be advised to the ASX as soon as possible after the meeting. Now, in closing the meeting, for those shareholders and visitors who have driven to our AGM today and parked in the festival car park on Charlotte Street, Brisbane, arrangements have been made for reduced parking fees. You will need to collect a car parking voucher from the information desk in the foyer outside the meeting and follow the instructions on the voucher. There being no further business, that concludes this annual general meeting, and I would like to thank you once again for your attendance and support. I invite you all to stay and join me, my fellow directors, and members of the executive management team for refreshments which will be served at the back of the ballroom and in the foyer. And finally, I'd like to give you one more look at the new fly-through we've developed for Queen's Wharf, Brisbane. Thanks again for joining us at our meeting today.